Wait. Before you go skipping the intro, I know you guys like doing that. Last year we came out with The Shape of Shadows. This year we're doing Sasquatch and Missing Man. Me and Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles, you know the guy. We went to Ground Zero where he had his Bigfoot encounter and we investigated. We hunted the Bigfoot and crazy stuff happened. If you want to see that documentary, we are doing a world premiere on May 5th. That's Sunday, May 5th. If you want tickets to that event, link is in the description below. Go ahead and check it out. Get your tickets and go ahead and skip the intro now.
Merkel Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me, and they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkel. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach me that way as well. Either works for me, just get a hold of me. If you want more shows on a weekly basis, every Thursday we drop member-exclusive episodes on the website and the Confessionals app. And also on YouTube. There are two separate memberships. You get the same content at both locations, YouTube and the Confessionals member app, which is also the website itself. If you're interested in all that stuff, go ahead, check it out, theconfessionalspodcast.com/join for the app and website and YouTube for YouTube. All right, friends, if you haven't done so yet, check out merkelfilms.com. That's where we have all our documentaries. Today, we have Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles coming on the show to talk about Bigfoot, Dogman, where we believe these things come from. A great conversation with Wes in preparation for the upcoming documentary, Sasquatch and the Missing Man, where we are featuring his story. The live premiere for that documentary is on this Sunday, May 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want tickets to this live premiere, it's a digital virtual live premiere. All you got to do is go to moment.co/Sasquatch. Link in the description of this episode. You can get yourself your tickets there and you will watch it there. So if you want to watch Sasquatch and the Missing Man, where Wes Germer talks about his encounter story, we go investigate the location and we talk to other people who have had encounters in that area. You're not going to want to miss this live premiere of Sasquatch and the Missing Man this Sunday, May 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, let's get to Wes in this great conversation about Dogman, Bigfoot, where they come from, and he talks about some stories he's had on his show right now. All right, today we have Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles. Wes, what's going on, man?
What's going on, Tony? Good to be here, man.
Hey, man. Listen, it's been almost 500 episodes, I think, since you've actually officially been on The Confessionals.
Wow, that long, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I've been on your show here and there and stuff, but I think the only time, actually having you on by yourself solo, because when I had you on by yourself solo, it was for episode 52 and we covered your Bigfoot encounter. And then I think it was like two other times after that, I had you on for what we were calling the think tanks, and people still say, oh, you should do another think tank. And I'm like, I'm not a big fan of thinking anymore. Like, I just, I'd rather not, you know? So,
yeah.
But, I mean, it's been a long time, man. And, we have this documentary coming out, Sasquatch and the Missing Man. I'll tell you what, man, it's featuring heavily you and your story in the documentary. And it was probably one of the hardest things to find a name for. Cause I was like, how do I name this? Like it's about Sasquatch, but we have this like missing 411 thing. And then, Joseph is like Sasquatch and the Missing Man. Let's keep it simple. And like, perfect.
I like that title actually. I like that title a lot. Yeah. Unfortunately they found that missing man, but, I like,
yeah. So
sorry. So, did I give away the ending? I'm just joking.
You ruined my documentary, man. I think that they suspect that the remains are his, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in my book, the jury's still out. here's the thing though. I mean, like, what do you think about it? I mean, it's interesting because, all right. So what they didn't say in the Facebook post is information that I was told by John's ex-fiance, which is that when they actually made a search party and through that whole area they combed, they found four dead bodies, but none of them were John's. And so now months later, there's another human remains pile,
yeah,
and they suspect it's John.
Yeah.
And so like, I personally don't have a whole lot of high hopes on that because they found four other bodies that weren't John's to begin with. Do you have any information on that other than what I just shared?
No, basically what you said is what I got. They found a bunch of dead bodies up there. Remember I told you, people go up there missing all the time. And it's rarely, even people from this area don't realize how many people go missing right there. A couple of years back, I was looking into this guy. He was some kid. I say kid, he was like 20 or 21. And he drank, I guess they claim he was drunk. And he fell into the river and drowned. You've seen the river. You can't drown. I mean, you can walk across. You can walk across the same.
Yeah.
And it just didn't add up. But as far as what your question was, no, I haven't. I got that they found another one and they think it's John. They think it's the guy that was actually missing. But I don't think anyone has total proof yet.
Yeah. And the way they found it, talking about it being a human skull and then body parts being found nearby, that's different, you know, like, to me, all right, so you can go down the Bigfoot route. Did Bigfoot tear somebody from limb to limb? Well, if it did, then, why is it just being found now after they combed the area?
Yeah.
But what are the, I don't know the area as well as you do. Is there a chance that area might be a dumping grounds for, you know, like, illegal activity, like the people get killed, they chop them up and dump them up there?
No, I don't think it's known for that. There's not like the cartel running through there. And I don't think it's been known as a dumping ground. But I mean, there has been a lot of people go missing in that area. The Native Americans, basically, from the very beginning, they're like, we're not setting up shop here. There's something wrong with this land. And they, that's what Yakult means, is Haunted Valley. That's a Native American term of what they gave it. And, you know, if you were living back in like the 1800s, that'd be a cool place to go set up shop. You got fresh water. You got plenty of game. You're relatively insulated from the heat and everything. I mean, you have a lush forest, basically a jungle, and they refused to set up shop there. They're like, we're out of here. So I don't know if there's like, it's cursed or what's going on. It's a beautiful place at night. I think the atmosphere changes. Doesn't feel like such a pretty, beautiful place, but during the day it is.
So when you and your brother went up there, was that your first time going up there at night?
That was my first time there. I'd been to Moulton Falls several times, but I never drove past Moulton Falls. And that's why I say the first night we were there, I was like, I kind of knew the area, but I didn't know exactly where we were at because I'd never driven back that far.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful area, but I can definitely, I am witness to the environment change at night. Yeah. And it, what's interesting is that the first night we went up there, it was dead. Like there was no activity. It was just,
yeah,
it was honestly, it was boring. I was just like, well, I hope we can muster a documentary out of this.
Yeah.
And I remember that second night that we went up there, it just all changed for us. It started before we even got out of the RV, the vocalizations, the knocking on the wall, and it just kind of escalated from there. And one thing that I'll tell you, one thing that didn't make the documentary that happened to Joel and I, and it didn't make it because we only had one person running the camera and it wasn't caught on camera even remotely, is that when we were outside in the rain and Joel had come back and we were all kind of getting ready to go back on the RV, Joel and I were the last ones outside and we're standing next to the RV and we hear a deep guttural growl behind us. Like hair stand up, you turn around thinking that it's going to be right there and there was nothing there. We walked to the back of the RV, looked around the corner, didn't see anything there. And then we got on the RV pretending that was going to keep us safe. And so, but that happened. And I was like, you know, it didn't go in the documentary because it just, there was nothing there to document. Like it wasn't literally filmed. But it did happen to us. And it takes me back to your story where you described that towards the beginning, those things growling and you could feel it. And, you know, kind of, it took this, your experience and put it into real life for us. And knowing that we were having that, all that other stuff happen around there in the same area that you had there. I understand why you don't go back up there, man. Like I wouldn't, if I experienced what you experienced, I would have done the same thing. I'd be like, you guys are crazy, but I'm not going back. I already saw the things. There's a lot of people in that area though that have had a lot of different experiences. And I know you've been documenting obviously on your show for, gosh, I mean, when did you start your show? 2012, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 2012. 2012 or 2013. I think it was 2012.
Yeah. A long time, man. Over 10 years. You've experienced a lot and talked to a lot of people. Most recently though, you had somebody on your show and I think you told me it was in Provo, Utah. Was the guy in Provo, Utah been staying on that property and that activity? Could you let the people know about that? Cause I know we have a crossover of audience and stuff, but I think that story was one that I remember you called me about. You're like, dude, this story is bananas. And I had people messaging me about it because of some of the things that happened during that experience that he had.
Yeah, the episode's called 3 Months in Hell. And the gentleman that I had on, he really wasn't into Bigfoot. Like Bigfoot wasn't even on his radar. And he found this property and basically the guy had an RV on the property that he was renting out. And it was cheap. It was easy. So this kid moves into it. And literally from day one, these things start tormenting him. They'd start hitting his RV. They'd growl at him, they'd run off. And he had pictures of all the damage. He had video recordings. You can hear them hit in the side of the RV and then run off. And it just got worse and worse and worse. I mean, this kid was terrified. He was absolutely terrified. And he started setting up cameras all around the RV and some pointing to the home. And he got some weird pictures. I mean, some of them are blob squatches, but he got some really bizarre pictures. He was saying one of these creatures was on the homeowner's roof. And to me, that's kind of what it looks like. You know, you and I get blob squatches all day long and people are like, oh, hey, there's 15 Sasquatches in these bushes. And you're like, all I see is bushes. But this guy, I think he was capturing some real stuff. I really do. And this dog man thing showed up. He didn't know what that was. He talked about its teeth. He said it was slobbering everywhere. And the aggression towards him, as you listen to the show, it gets worse, almost like they really wanted to kill him. It got so bad. I'm giving you like the summary of what happened, but basically it got so bad that he worked from home or from his RV, so he never had to leave. He barricaded himself in, you know, this poor kid's like peeing in bottles. He's not going to the bat, you know, he's not leaving the RV for anything. And he's, you know, guns everywhere. And he ended up leaving. What was weird about the encounter, and I still haven't figured this part out, is the homeowner, they were like terrified of the homeowner, which I don't get. He would call the homeowner to rush over. What's weird about the homeowner is he never said that there was Sasquatch on the property. The kid would start describing to the homeowner what these creatures look like, and he never said yes, and he never said no. But the weird part is he never treated this kid like he was crazy. Almost like he knew, but he didn't want to say he knew. And the weird part is every time he called the homeowner would immediately rush back to the RV. Man, he said these creatures would scatter when this guy would show up. They would absolutely run away. And, you know, even this dog man creature would run, you know, I don't think the dog man, I think he only made like one or two appearances, but the other creatures would scatter and run away. And the day he left the RV, he would have basically his gun in one hand, handful of stuff, run out to his car, throw it in his car, run back to the RV. And he was making a couple, he didn't want to go leave and take all his stuff and then come back for a second load. So he just loaded as much as he could into this car. And he said, while that was going on, they were around the wood line making all sorts of noise and running in between the trees and almost like intimidation. And he said, the weird part is the homeowner came out and he kind of lived over, I think, on a little hill. It's not like they were next door to each other. I mean, they were really close, but he was a little bit of a distance away. And he said, the homeowner came out, started revving the motorcycle engine. In front of his house, just wah, 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 for no reason. And the kid was like, I think he was doing that as like giving me cover to leave. He goes, it was the most weird thing, the weirdest thing I've ever seen. He's never done that. But from his home, he could see the creatures and he could see the RV and he could see what was going on. And, you know, no, hey, goodbye, it was good seeing you, that sort of thing. Or, hey, don't worry about the rent. Or he was just like, bye. But he was revving the engine, trying to get the creatures to kind of back off so he could get his stuff into his car so he could leave. So he left, and he left behind like thousands of dollars worth of stuff, brand new Xbox, brand new PlayStation. And it was a crazy story, man. There's more to it. I didn't sleep very much last night, so I sound like I'm rambling. But I felt bad for this kid. I mean, you could hear the emotion when he's talking about this. This kid was scared, absolutely scared. And when you see the damage, the pictures, some of the videos he sent me, I 100% believe what happened is what this kid said happened.
I mean, the relationship here with the homeowner, I mean, you said you're having a hard time figuring it out. I mean, at the very least, it sounds like the homeowner must have had some kind of pre-existing standing relationship with these things. I don't know. A relationship sounds almost friendly. I don't think that is probably the case here, but it's like something must have happened beforehand that these things recognized the homeowner and ran away. I mean, unless maybe, do you think that those creatures would have reacted to anybody going back there during those moments? Or it does seem like it was very particular, the homeowner, there's something to do with the homeowner.
Yeah, there was something with the homeowner, because the other weird part, so he had a mother-in-law studio underneath his home, and he rented that out to a family with a child. And this guy, the guest I had on the show, he was saying that, you know, I didn't want, he was worried about the kid, basically. And, but he didn't know how to tell the homeowner or the new renters that are over there, hey, by the way, I captured this dog man. And he did have a weird picture. I mean, it looks like a freaking canine. And so he told the new homeowner eventually, or the new renters eventually, what was going on. And I guess there was one night where this dog man thing showed up again. And he said that he woke up the next day and that new renter was gone. Within a matter of like 2 weeks, they were gone. They were leaving. And so I don't know if the impression I get is the homeowner. This guy says he thinks the homeowner was shooting at them and was very aggressive. Like he would just come for them. And which is weird when you think about it, how big these creatures are, how weird it is. And you're just going to go in there charging at them, you know, with mm-hmm. their size. Something is very wrong. Something didn't make sense with the homeowner. He knew something. I know a lot of my members were saying that, oh, he was the dog man. I don't know if that's possible or not.
I love your members. Yeah.
But I mean, when you listen to this kid's story, I mean, it doesn't sound that crazy. It really doesn't sound that crazy that this guy might be the dog man. Because he was very aggressive towards these things and they scattered the minute he showed up. They wanted nothing to do with this guy. And I don't understand.
So it's like he's the king dog man.
Yeah.
He's the king dog man of the property. I'll tell you, like, I'm glad that your members said that because it kind of warms up the conversation. Because your show is about Sasquatch and everything, but over the years, you've definitely done your fair share of episodes with Dogman. What are your thoughts on the Dogman topic? I mean, like, your paradigm would shift with the idea of Bigfoot with your own experience. As far as I know, we've talked a lot over the years, you've never had a personal experience with Dogman, but yet you have covered it on your show. You've had people on the show talking about it. What are your thoughts? I mean, obviously you believe people are seeing something and having these interactions. So what do you think these are? I mean, like it's easy to explain Bigfoot. If you want to go just a pure natural, oh, it's a upright walking hominid. We can't keep up with, you're on the confessions, bro. I don't believe that. I mean, when it comes to Dogman, that's a little harder to explain that way. Wouldn't you say, or would you say?
Yeah, I think you even have a difficult time explaining Sasquatch that way, you know, and I get why people think the go down the ape route. I completely get why they do that. But having said that, after a while, you start to realize there's questions you can't answer and there's, answers to those questions that make no sense. That make no sense. You can say, well, why don't we have a body of one that died naturally? And you can get away with that argument in the Pacific Northwest. Hard to get away with the argument when it's Arizona. You know, in the Pacific Northwest, you can go, well, you know, if I shot a deer, it'd be gone in a week. The forest is, it consumes everything in the Pacific Northwest, especially with the soil being so acidic. It will consume everything. Arizona, you know, you start talking about these other states where these creatures are, and all of a sudden that argument starts to fall apart, you know. Then when you get outside the United States, and you go to Australia, you go to China, almost every continent has a lore of this thing. Even reports up until this day. And you tell me some Russian doesn't pop one off, you know, coming through his yard. Some, I don't know if they can have guns in Australia, but you know what I mean? Like, I just have a hard time buying into the fact that some of these arguments. So when the Dogman thing came along, I really didn't, I didn't know what to make of the Dogman. My first thought was, there is this other Sasquatch that people see. And I just had a guy on, a hunter, that ran into one. It's very rare. But basically, it's a Sasquatch with a long snout. People describe it looking more like a baboon. And for the longest time, I was like, that's what people must be seeing. Because an upright canine, that makes no sense. Like, it doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? And I was very skeptical of the dogman until I really started talking to hunters. The first hunter I talked to, he was on the border of Louisiana and Texas. Now, this guy had been hunting longer than I'd been alive. And basically what he does is he goes out to properties and he gets rid of nuisance predators. And not only that, but when you go into the hunting store, you can buy game calls and you basically, you know, it's your own little, so you don't have to learn how to, you know, do a turkey call. You can just go get the thing and it'll do it for you. Well, most of those game calls are his calls. He created most of those. He's actually kind of a famous hunter. And when I had him on the show, he describes this encounter with a dog man where he was doing this wounded rabbit call. And he was there to get a mountain lion off the property, I believe, if my memory's right. And he said what came down the hill was the biggest wolf he had ever seen in his life. And he goes, this thing was a monster. And it was on all fours. Man, he's still thinking wolf. And he's hiding in the bushes, and it's coming to his game call. It's trying to figure out where he's at in the bushes. So he has his rifle looking through the scope right between the eyes of this thing. And as he was looking at the face of it, he was describing it to me. It was a little bit more than a wolf. But I mean, if you were to put it in very simple terms, it looked like a wolf. Then it stood up on two legs like a man. And he said the arms were, he goes, everything from the neck down was very, in a weird way, like a man. He goes, but the head was nothing more than a wolf. And it was looking around, sniffing the air, trying to figure out where he was at. And it pinpointed where he was at. And they make direct eye contact. And he has the gun on it, pointed, you know, he's right between the eyes of this thing. And it takes off running. And he said, I've never seen anything run that quick. And this thing's on two legs and it runs off, by the way. And so, you know, that was many years ago. And after a while, you start to hear the same consistent report on these things over and over and over again. The weird part is they seem to be bulletproof. I had a biologist in, where was he, Minnesota, I believe. He shot one. And he thought it was just this weird large wolf on his property. And he shot it, and the bullet, it didn't do anything. Didn't even phase this thing. And so I guess what you ask is my take on it. I think what is, you know, many years ago with the UFO thing, people always assumed it was beings coming from other galaxies millions of miles away, and we can't stop them. Most UFO hunters now believe they're coming from here. There's something going on where they're coming into our reality. They are, and I kind of think Sasquatch does the same thing. I remember when I very first got into this, and even the dogman, you would hear Native Americans say that. And it sounds crazy. What do you mean it's coming into our reality? That sounds like, so when they're here, they're physical, but then they go off somewhere else. Like, how do you explain? I think anyone halfway rational or halfway sane, that sounds completely like BS. But then you get weird reports of Sasquatch just seemingly vanishing into thin air. And people mm-hmm. aren't like proud to come on and say this because they know it sounds crazy. Or the dog man. It just makes me wonder if they're coming, like, especially the dog man, I think is an entity. Probably a demonic entity. People who aren't religious. Let's go with entity then, coming from somewhere else. And when it's here, it's physical. There's no other way to explain. I mean, if that sounds crazy, give me another explanation on this dogman thing. Thousands of people are just lying for what? You know what I mean? And what's weird is if you get thousands of people lying, you would think there would be all sorts of inconsistencies, and there's not. People don't know each other. They're telling the exact same story. They're telling you, you know, So I guess to answer your question in a long roundabout way, I think for sure the Dogman is some entity coming into our reality. And it's all throughout history too. That's the other weird part. When you start looking at history, you get weird reports of these half man, half canine things running around. It's bizarre, man.
Yeah.
But that's my take on it. And I don't know. I always say I really don't know what to make of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think none of us know. We all have our own opinions and thoughts on the topics. But I mean, what you're saying is really kind of the vibe that, you know, I kind of go with myself. And what, you know, we tend to talk a lot about on the show is that these things, Bigfoot, Dogman, UFOs, aliens, other things people are experiencing are much more interdimensional than previously thought. Let's put it that way. I mean, even with the Dogman stuff, I mean, like you look at ancient times, the Anubis, and right. you just see out throughout history. I think in, what was it, France in the 1800s or something like that, they had that wolf creature that was killing like over 200 people in that small village or something. Yep. This is something that's been going on for a really long time. This isn't just, you know, people, degradation of human intelligence over time. Yep. Like this has been happening for a long time. And you know, there is an interaction with these things that is being documented, not only on the personal level that we're hearing on our shows, but also on the governmental level. When you're talking about the UFOs and things like that, I mean, in the last, let's just say, you know, my show has been around for 7 years, so let's just say 7 years, the UFO topic has taken a whole different spin. You know, before the quote unquote disclosure, the most common perception was that these are ET extraterrestrial. They came from another galaxy, highly intelligent. The most probably woo-woo you would get was they're us from the future. You know, and they're time traveling. But this idea of these being more spiritual beings transcending realms is more new, but at the same time, it's not, because like you look at like Ezekiel and Ezekiel's wheel. I mean, like that sounds like a UFO experience, you know, and that was thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I pulled this tweet up here because I find it very interesting for many different reasons. This guy tweeted out, he said, in terms of those metallic spheres / drones, this is what the alleged new firsthand UFO whistleblower Jason Sands had to say in his space last night, meaning, you know, the X spaces where people talk live. The metallic spheres are NHI, non-human intelligence, drones. They are using them because our direct energy weapons are affecting their manned crafts. So this whistleblower is coming forward and saying that these spiritual entities are now sending drones to our realm and not sending their manned crafts because we are interacting with them seemingly in an aggressive, hostile manner. And they are now sending drones so that they can, I guess, spare their manned UFOs. To me, this whole thing is starting to take a real interdimensional shift that wasn't really possible just a few years ago. And when it comes to the Dogman and Bigfoot, I think there's a real argument to be made with that stuff, man. Like I had just talked to a guy, and this hasn't even aired yet, but I had talked to a guy who owns property between, I think it's the Bray Road, the Beast of Bray Road, and Brower Road. But he owns like 35 acres of farmland, and he's been documenting the Beast of Bray Road on his property for, I think it's like 12 years or something like that. And some of the stuff that he has, man, it's like, that doesn't seem very physical. It seems interdimensional. And one thing that's like a sign, I guess, of, you know, things is this metallic sound. And this is what people were messaging me about with your show. The guy that was on that property and was being tormented by these things, the creatures, people were telling me that I had to go listen to your show because this guy was talking about the metal sounds. Do you recall what he was saying?
Yeah, he would describe weird vocalizations. He would describe the normal vocalizations that a lot of people do, but he would also describe a lot of metal sounds, like metallic sounds, weird, odd metallic sounds he would hear all the time. Like one of the examples was you'd hear this gate door open, and it was like a metal gate. There's no metal gate anywhere near this property. And he would hear it constantly. And one of the nights he heard it is when he saw that dogman thing. But he would hear this metal gate open all the time. And there's no metal gate. There's nothing around that would cause that sound. And he looked everywhere. He went on Google Earth. He was like, well, maybe it's around here somewhere and I'm just not seeing it. And he said it was a, you know, so that sort of thing is what he would hear. Just weird metallic sounds, you know, that weren't there. There's nothing to go, well, that's this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I say we because I look at like what we talk about on the show is I feel like if people are returning in the as an audience, then I assume that they're kind of at least walking in step with what I think. So when I say we, I mean me and the audience. But like we've been finding in conversation these metallic sounds popping up before people have encounters with these creatures. And I don't know if this is a new phenomenon or it probably isn't a new phenomenon. It might be a new phenomenon where people are actually talking about it. I don't know what if you ever recall hearing this as a repetitive theme, but I have over the last couple of years. And the theory, my working theory is that it's not even a theory. It's more of a question. Is it possible if these things are coming from other realms, is that the sound that people hear when that activity starts? Like when something is starting to pierce that veil, come through whatever you want to call it, a portal or whatever, is the sound, does that make a sound? And does that sound remind people of metallic sounds? I've heard, you know, sounds like a metal door slamming, gates opening, crinkling of, you know, metal sheets, things like that. And it's something that I theorize, I guess, and think about out loud, which is, you know, does a portal have a sound? And is that sound metal? I don't know. Is that your first time that you recall hearing about the metal sounds on your show?
No, you hear about them all the time. I remember this guy who was, he teaches like quantum mechanics and all this stuff. He described that if there, or theorizes, I should say, that if you were to go from one dimension to the next, there would not only be sound, but a residue of smell. And which is weird, because when Bigfoot's around you, you hear this, you always hear about this weird smell that doesn't act like normal, like something stinking. You know, if something stinks, you can smell it. As you get closer and closer, like, wow, this thing really stinks, but it permeates the air. You know, like a skunk or something like that. What's weird about the smell with Sasquatch is people walk into it and walk out of it. Smell doesn't work that way. You know, you don't walk into it and walk out of it. Even if you're past the smell, you're still going to smell a little bit of it. You know what I mean? And that's not how people describe it. I don't know. As far as your question goes, yeah, there's been many accounts of people hearing metallic or metal type sounds. The problem is it's not every time. It's not consistent. So you hear about it, but then you'll hear an encounter where a hunter runs into one and there's no metallic sound. He just sees a creature. And Ron Moore had described that. When he captured those Sierra sounds, what, back in the 60s? I think it was 60s.
I think it was the 70s, but yeah, somewhere around there.
I want to say late 60s, early 70s. I could be wrong. But,
I'll trust you on this.
He describes the sounds of car doors being slammed. He describes the sound of a lot of metallic sounds that weren't there. I think Ron talked about one time almost a gate sound he heard, and there's no gate around there. So it might be something to that. I don't know. It's just what's frustrating about the Sasquatch topic is, you'll have people, let's say a hunter or a hiker, run into one. And basically they're running into what they describe as nothing more than an animal, some weird primate. And the encounter lasts very short. usually the creature goes one way, the person runs the opposite way. So when I was saying in the beginning, I get why people say it's an ape. I get why people go down that route. But then you have people who have these things on their property and they'll start telling you weird, odd things that, you know, because they're seeing them more than just that one quick, like a hunter or hiker. It's like, oh, you know, I ran into some weird ape and it ran off. It was kind of man-like, but it happened so quick. Then on people's properties, they start talking about these weird lights they're seeing, or they'll talk about the eyes glowing. Man, I've had many, 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 many hunters that I've insulted over the years by saying, you sure that wasn't eye shine? You know, these guys know eye shine. They see it every day. But I almost have to ask that question for the audience, not so much for my own wondering. But, and their guys are like, no, it was, these eyes were absolutely glowing like lights. Or you'll get, you just start getting into the weird stuff, you know, and it's really hard to know. That's why there's such a division in this topic, because people who want it to be an ape, all this other stuff is BS. We only talk to the people that had an encounter that ran into what they call an ape, and we're going to go with that narrative. All this other stuff they throw away because it's uncomfortable, and I get why they throw it away. They want science to look into this, you know, non-human primate that somehow has evaded everyone all these years and blah, 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 blah. Well, if you're looking for honest answers, you can't just throw everything away. Even though it sounds crazy, it doesn't fit into my worldview. When I very first really started going with everything, I'm gonna take this whole picture and look at it. And I was uncomfortable having people come on and go, hey, you know, Les Stroud going, hey, I saw the creature up on the hill with the small one. And it's, I heard in my head, if you want to see us stay the night, and it freaked me out. And I left. What do you do with that? Les has not, and I know Les very well. Les has nothing to gain by saying that. He has everything to lose by saying that. But he's like, this is what mm-hmm. happened. So what do you do with something like that? I don't even remember what your first question was, man. It's been a rough
week. It doesn't matter.
It's been a really rough week.
Just having good conversation. No, the Les Stroud thing, I don't know if people realize this, but it happened about 30 minutes from where I'm sitting right now.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he was doing it for Survivor Man Bigfoot. And he came here to East Tennessee, and Scott Carpenter, God rest Scott Carpenter's soul, he took him out to an area that he had been researching.
Oh, that's right.
And having lots of experiences. And just to let people know, so we have, we shot a documentary that will be released in 2025. And it's the most dramatic experience I have ever had in the woods. And it happened in the same woods that Les had that experience.
Oh, well.
I thought I was going to lose my life for a split second. I literally pulled my gun out. It was caught on camera. It was the most terrifying thing I've ever experienced. And at the same time, it was the most confusing thing I've ever experienced. But it happened literally in those woods. And I've had numerous really weird things happen in those woods since. Like, I go back a lot because I can't help myself. I'm a little psycho. But then again, I haven't seen it like you have. You know, like, I've had these experiences that scared the crap out of me.
Was that with the monkeys? I mean, I don't want to ruin it.
No, it's fine. Yeah, I've talked about it before, just sparingly. But yeah, the monkeys and being charged by something. It was big. It drooled all over me, and it said, "I'm sparing your life today." No, not that quite dramatic, but it scared me a lot.
Yeah, and I don't want to ruin the documentary, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. I'm convinced that the best way to sell a documentary is to tell people what's in it. You know, that's the way I look at things. The same thing with books. Like, whenever I have an author come on the show, I'm like, hey, tell them what's in the book, because that's the best way to sell the book. You know, people, you know, sometimes they dance around and like, well, you have to buy the book to find out. And it's like, nobody's going to buy the book now.
I hate when authors do that, man. I always warn them about that, too. I'm like, you have to think about the listener. You know, you're not going to go into it because you got to buy the book. You're just pissing people off. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I totally know what you mean. And so that's the philosophy I have with the documentaries. That's why, you know, when I go on other people's shows and I talk about it, I literally talk about what's in it and stuff. Because, I mean, listen, we're selling a story, the journey that we went on, and we want to tell you about that. But me telling you the journey doesn't compare to you experiencing it with me. And that's why the documentary is there, right? And so same thing with the books. But yeah, that Les Stroud thing, it happened in the same woods that I frequent. Do you think that there's a spiritual component to, like, you were talking about how people kind of define these creatures and stuff. Do you think that there is a pre-existing foundation that people have on a spiritual level that they lean on to define these things? So like, somebody is like, God's not real, there is no supernatural realm, therefore all these people saying that, you know, these creatures disappear or whatever, they're crazy, and vice versa. Do you think that if people that, you know, come into an experience where they have that worldview of a supernatural realm and stuff, maybe it's not as hard for them to, you know, perceive what they experienced, or this idea that these things could, you know, seemingly disappear in the middle of a field, you know? Like, I just feel like there's like this, especially on the natural side of things. It's like, a lot of the people who don't want it to be anything other than a physical creature, also the same people who are like, God's not real, we've always been here, or we came here from some kind of little tiny cell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I'm not really sure of the question. I think that I'm always amazed when people don't think that God is real. I'm not, I get accused of it now all the time, but I'm really not, you know, a religious person by any means. But, you know, I think when you, to answer your question, I would say, you'll get some people who are heavily into science, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think science is a good thing. You know, there's a lot of things that science can explain. But they stop at that point. I remember I was watching this atheist, and he does DNA. He's like a DNA something. I don't remember what he does, but he studies like the cell structure and basically how the makeup of the human body. And after years and years and years of studying this and becoming proficient and becoming somewhat of an expert in this, he came to the conclusion that there must be God, because he went through this long explanation that was way over my head because it's all DNA. And he was basically saying, this whole thing is designed. This just didn't happen. There's a design behind this. And, you know, you don't even have to go to a DNA level to stop and go, there's a design to the universe. You know, the sun's in a position where we just had that eclipse, right? What happens if that moon stays in front of that sun? Guess what? It's a very short time. We all freeze to death. We all die. The sun, if it was any further away in our galaxy, we would all die. If it was any closer to us in our galaxy, we would all die. That seems weird to me. I mean, and all that happened by chance? I struggle with that, because that seems like a hell of a coincidence and a hell of a lot of chances going on for something or someone not to be designing this whole thing. Or even us, our human bodies. The human body is the greatest gift you'll ever have. It's the best. And yeah, it deteriorates over time, but it's amazing when you look at it. So I'm always amazed when scientists stop at a certain point, and there's atheists out there, because if you are really a student of science, it's usually you're a student of all sciences. And when you really start looking into it, you're like, there's no way all this happened by chance. There is no way all this happened by chance. But I think sometimes people get in that mindset and they don't believe, like he said, one way, they don't really buy into God or spiritual entities. So when they hear this stuff, it sounds crazy. But it's like I said, go get a Ouija board, go play with it for 4 months and come back and tell me the spiritual world is not real. I promise you won't.
Yeah. I mean, like, so I guess.
I answered any of your questions.
No, you did. You did. You actually helped me maybe help understand what I was trying to ask. My thing was, I feel like people come into these topics with a base understanding of what reality is, whether it's a spiritual understanding or a scientific, evolutionary type understanding. And based off of those understandings, most people, not all people, but most people stay in those lanes throughout the entire journey of trying to understand these other topics.
Yeah.
And there tends not to be this crossover. And I personally had the crossover. I came into it with a spiritual worldview, but I looked at these cryptids as very physical. Dogman was something that, like, I was like, come on, give me a break.
Yeah,
that too. Ain't real.
Yeah.
And the Bigfoot, like, I was like, well, we're going to go find the thing. Like, it's a real physical creature out there. It's not going to be that hard to find. We'll go out and we'll knock this out in a weekend. Like, I really thought it was going to be that easy. Like, I was just like, yeah, it's a physical creature. It's huge. How can we miss it? And as I looked into it more and more, the more I started jumping over to the other side of things, I'm like, I think these things might be more spiritual. But in general, I get the sense that when people have this, whatever the foundation is for them, that tends to be their launching point, and they stay in that lane a lot on both sides. And I just wasn't sure if you kind of experienced the same thing in those thought processes.
No, I think what happens is, like I said before, you'll get a hunter or hiker or whatever that will have an encounter, and it's brief. And basically what they saw was a non-human primate, even though it kind of looked human, and it was a very short glance at the thing. And then they become researchers, and they're tracking down, trying to find this ape the rest of their life. And so when people will say, oh, the eyes were glowing, you know, people will go, well, that's BS. I never saw the eyes glowing in my encounter. And so they live in this really narrow bubble of, well, that didn't happen to me, so it must be complete nonsense. And then you'll get people on the other end of it that, you know, the eyes were glowing. And so they don't know what to make of that, because there's no ape, there's no animal running around that has its eyes glowing with light, because you can't see. So I don't know, it's so much like a preconceived notion of whether you're religious or not. I think a lot of what happens is it has to do with what they saw in their one and only encounter and nothing else. I don't know. Does that make any sense? I don't know.
It makes sense to a certain extent, but I mean, like, I've never had an encounter, you know, and there's people out there that have experiences. Like, I think you're speaking for the people from the perspective of the people who've had encounters, but like there's people out there like me who've never had an encounter like you had or other people. And, for my side of the camp, like, you and I are representing two different sides of camps here. But from my side of the camp, I feel like, there seems to be, yeah. And for a world of people who, at least this used to be more true, I think, back in the day than it is now, to be honest with you. When I first started podcasting, this realm, whatever you want to call it, of a category we delve into, was like open-minded. We think outside the box kind of people. There were certain boxes that just were not willing to jump out of at all. It was just like, no, whether you saw the thing and that's what formed your opinion on it, or you dove into it like me, it was like you found a lane and you stuck to it. And it can be a little disheartening for me at times when you see that over and over again. But I think at the same time, I think that we are experiencing a shift where, you know, and maybe if anything, because I kind of poo-poo on the whole government disclosure stuff with UFOs. Like, it just kind of, I'm like, yeah, they're probably telling us like half truths, what they want us to know so they can manipulate us more. But like the good thing that I see coming out of it is I am seeing more and more people give more credence to the idea of interdimensionalism than ever before. And I for me, and the way I think about things, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty encouraging. Now for you, if you're getting emails accusing you that you're becoming a spiritual person or whatever, they're probably, be honest, are you getting emails saying you're hanging out with Merkel too much?
I got a few.
I believe it.
But what people don't understand is what builds our friendship is we're two completely different people, but we respect each other. And, you know, I know when we very first became friends, you were way more spiritual than I ever was. I was like, I don't know about all this. But it has nothing to do with you. It's just like my own little journey in life. And, you know, it's hard to copy someone when it comes to being spiritual, because you can't copy someone. It doesn't work that way. I just think there's more to life than, you know, there's more going on here than what most people realize. I think personally, I don't know. That's my opinion, of course.
Yeah, no, I do too. So listen, let's wind it down here, but, I know you like you like talking about other things as well, and you're going to be looking into doing some different things with your show moving forward with new segments and things like that. What are some topics that, you know, Wes Germer enjoys diving into that maybe the world wouldn't really, you know, because I think maybe everybody that listens to your show and, you know, it's Sasquatch Chronicles. So Wes just looks at Sasquatch, right? That's all you ever looked at. I think that you don't know anything about anything else, I'm assuming.
Well, that might be accurate.
Well, knowing and looking into things are very different things, right? So like, I look into a lot of things. To say I know anything, you know.
I like other topics. I mean, I've studied, you know, I almost think I know where Atlantis is, and I think it's Antarctica. And I've been studying these old maps, because Antarctica didn't show up on any maps until like the 1800s. They said anyway. But then they start finding all these old maps from like 1500 and before, and it's the continent of Antarctica, but it's 7 degrees north of where Antarctica is now. And they were calling it Atlantis on all these maps. Makes you wonder what, you know, that's a weird reference, because Atlantis is a pretty famous place, but even on all these maps pre-1500s, it shows up, but it's 7 degrees north. And it makes you wonder if the continent shifted and it went down there, because Atlantis is like one of those things where it's in every lore of every culture, but it just vanished. I like studying that. I like the pyramids. I was telling you about this crazy dream I had about the pyramids. I think I was looking too much into them. and I'll tell you the dream if you want me to say it, but
I want you to say it. Do you want to say it?
Yeah, no, I mean, to answer your, and I'll tell you the what I dreamed, but I think that I like everything. I like World War II history. I like, I study a lot of weird stuff, man. A lot of stuff that just fascinates me. So it's pretty much around the box. And I know with my After Dark program, I've been saying it's coming, but I'm actually working on it, trying to get it produced and trying to figure out a few things. But my dream about the pyramid, and again, I don't know if I fell asleep listening to something on YouTube or if I was just looking into the subject too long, but I had this weird, and it was such a vivid dream. I mean, sometimes when you dream, they're very real, but sometimes when you dream, you're like, I can tell you what it smelled like, I can tell you what it felt like, I can tell you just a real, real vivid dream. Anyway, long story short, I had this crazy dream. I was in the Giza pyramid, the big one, and I was walking around trying to figure out what this building was for. Like, I couldn't figure out what this building was for. And the weird part is there was water running underneath the pyramid. And I was in a, I walked up, I think it was they called the King's Chamber. I don't know. It was just a room that I was in. And there was a weird sound I was hearing. And I don't remember if it was the E chord or what I was hearing, it was, I know it from the guitar. I played it before. I can't remember off the top of my head which chord I was hearing, but I was hearing a chord from the guitar. So I knew this sound, but it was constant. And the other weird part about it is it sounded like the, when you fire up Apple, the dun dun, dun dun. I mean, that's what, and it was driving me nuts the next day because I'd heard it so much in my dream. And basically what I was figuring out in my dream in one of the rooms, it looked like there was some sort of like explosion. Like the top was black, and this guy started explaining to me about the pyramid and was saying that the reason why the capstone on top is gold is this is a power station. The reason why they're all around the world is they're power stations. They are Wi-Fi, power, communication. And that's really what he was saying in my dream, that all of this is a power stations or power stations all around the world. These aren't just weird buildings, you know, because you find pyramids everywhere, even in Alaska, and you find them, you know, in the South America. And, but it was such a bizarre dream because I could tell you what it smelled like in there. It smelled like old. It smelled like your grandma's like closet. It just smelled old. And, I started researching it and I found Tesla's coil, like a mock-up of Tesla's coil. And it's exactly the same thing that the pyramid was for. You got to have water, it's frequency, and the gold capstone is because it is the best way to conduct energy, or it's the best conductor. And it was weird, man. It was a bizarre, like I said, I don't know that it wasn't like I got a message. I don't think I got a message from anyone, but it was just, maybe I was listening to YouTube when I fell asleep. I don't know, but it was a very, very vivid, bizarre dream. And I remember just sitting there in shock, realizing, oh, these are power stations. These are, I know that theory has been thrown around before, but I've never really looked into the pyramids that much. And I remember in one of the rooms, like I said, the walls were black, looked like some weird explosion went off in there. And the weird frequency, that dun-dun, dun-dun, you know, if anyone's ever in the Apple, they know what I'm talking about. That's what I was hearing in the pyramid. And there was some sort of like there's some sort of chemical reaction that you have to do to fire it up. But once it's on, it's on. But, you know, anyway, my crazy dream.
Well, no, I'm glad you said. Let me ask you something, because I'm assuming you don't get into dreams a whole lot on your show.
Not really.
But have you ever? All right, let me ask you this: when during that dream, did you have any moments where you felt like you knew you were dreaming, and like it felt more real than this reality?
I wouldn't say I felt like I was dreaming. I felt like I was there. Like when I woke up, I was like, holy crap, I've been inside the pyramid. Like that was my first thought. Like, oh, you know, I've been there. I know exactly what's inside that place, which I don't. But in my dream, I'm like, I was there. I was actually there. I know how this thing works. Like, not that I know exactly how it works, but I get the concept of what is going on here. And I kind of get the concept of this weird chemical reaction that has to happen in order to fire this thing up. I mean, I sound like a madman, but when I woke up, I think I even called you. I was like, I've been in the, you know, and I was just freaking out. I was like, I can tell you what it smelled like in there. I can tell you like, I could tell you everything about it. But again, until I go to the pyramids, I don't know if my dream is accurate or not, but, it wasn't so much like, oh, I'm dreaming. I felt like I was there. Like it was hot in the pyramid. I was sweating. I remember like my shirt was wet. I was like, God, it's hot in here. And it smelled, and it was bizarre, man. It was a bizarre. And I've done that a few times over the years. They're just really intense dreams to where I wouldn't say you know you're dreaming. It's like you just feel like I was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I guess that's where I'm going with it, where, you know, not that I can remember, at least. I don't remember having lucid dreams.
Yeah.
But from what I've been told, lucid dreams feel like you're really there. They feel like you're in this dream state, but it's like you're in a different state of existence that feels just as real as this real or more real. And when people are having those experiences, I think that that's not just a figment of somebody's imagination. That's not somebody looking into pyramids too much on YouTube. I think that there was some kind of experience that that person had that they, for very basic ways of explaining, they transcended something to be in another place, present in another place. And I was talking to you just the other day about the guy that was here in studio, Hunter, who essentially did that with my house. And you know, him and I, we still communicate. We're talking and stuff, but like that's an example of somebody who had a lucid dream, and his whatever makes us up on the inside, whether it's your soul, spirit, or something else, went away and it went somewhere else. And for him, it went to the end of my driveway, and he saw some funky stuff. And you know, it's just I think people have experiences where that's like with him, he had that dream and it held a lot of weight for me. It actually defined some things that were going on in my head at the moment. But then there's other experiences that people have where, you know, it's more of a almost like a download of information. And so I don't think it's to be taken lightly. I don't think you should, you know, dwell on it and feel like, oh, I have to figure this out. But I don't think that it should be just brushed off as, oh, it's just a silly dream, because I don't think it is a silly dream. I think dreams hold a lot more significance than what I traditionally have ever given. And, you know, I'm starting to wake up to that realization that when we go to sleep, there's more going on than just imagination.
And it could be. I'm telling you though, man, like when I woke up, I felt like that dream was more real than where I was at when I woke up. But again, I just think it was just a crazy, it was just a crazy dream that I had, you know?
Yeah. What you need to do.
I mean, if I was going to do that dream, I'd go sit like the Playboy Mansion. I wouldn't go to Giza and like hang out in Egypt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I need you to come to Tennessee, hang out with your woo-woo friend a little bit, and we'll get the woo-woo rubbed off on you. Because I'm telling you, like you didn't call me, you text me, and you text me a lot after you woke up.
I was
and
tripping like, out, man. I was like, holy crap, I've been, because it was so real. Like when I woke up, it wasn't as real as that dream. It was so bizarre. Like, you know, in most dreams, I can't say that I smell anything or I remember like sweating or, you know, in most dreams, do you ever notice like you can never really remember someone's face? Or you never really remember how you got from like point A to point B. All of a sudden now you're like in another dream and like, or you're somewhere else in that dream and you can't remember how you got there. This was kind of weird, man. Like I could tell you every moment of that dream. It's not like I just appeared somewhere else. And, but I think it might've just been a crazy, crazy dream, but who knows?
Yeah. I don't know, but I'll say that, I'm looking back at my text messages right now. I'm on the East Coast and you text me at 7 o'clock my time. So it was like early, this is something that affected you to the point that, you know, what is that? 4 o'clock, 4 a.m. your time. You're awake texting me about your
dreams. It was a trip, man. It was a trip.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild, man.
Out when I'm-
but, listen, man, I appreciate you hopping on with me. I'm looking forward to people being able to, watch the documentary. This is the first time that you've been able to share your experience on video like that. And I imagine, knowing you, I imagine it'll probably be the last time you do it. but you know, it's been a wild ride putting it together, and I appreciate you letting me share your story like that. You know, I think people are going to really enjoy it, and they're going to I think what we were able to do with it was there's a difference between episode 52 where you came on and shared your experience and then you sharing that experience and us being able to bring it to life through showing them where this happened. And I think it's going to be good for people to see. And I'm excited about it. So I just wanted to say thanks so much for not only coming on the show and just hanging out with me in leading up to the documentary premiere, but also letting me come out there with my clown posse to run around the woods and try to find Bigfoot on your turf.
Yeah, man. I was happy to do it. And thank you so much for having me, brother.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you have not done so yet, I highly encourage you to get your tickets for Sasquatch and the Missing Man because we are live premiering it this Sunday. If you want to be the first ones in the world to watch that documentary, the only way to do it is moment.co/Sasquatch. You get your tickets there and you watch it there this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I hope to see you there. And if I don't, I'll see you next Tuesday right here. And until then, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Bye.
Thought my old motto was a VA. I was working four cylinders to death. Put it on me, no teammate. Dreams running on fumes, no rest. You could bargain for my soul for a mansion and a couple billboards, no less. Yeah, thank God for a couple roadblocks. I don't know if I'd have stopped where the road ends. Spend years looking for the real me. Always came up missing. On the sidelines, trying to be the highlight, but under the bright lights, breaking all the guidelines. Yeah, Mr. Bull with no lifelines. Yeah, screaming, I don't need you. Fighting, but I'm free too. Neon lights make a path for my breath, like smoke in the cold every weekend. Spend years looking for the real.